where Norwalk comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
You know, one of the iconic stereotypes in our society is of white men of certain indiscriminate middle ages who go about their business. They don't really talk that much. They don't really emote that much. They support their families. They commute on the 659 going to Manhattan several days a week. They bring home a paycheck. To some extent, maybe they suffer in silence. Maybe they don't suffer. Maybe they're not silent. But to some extent, this kind of stoic resolve of a lot of men, white and black, who go about their businesses in a quiet way and deal with life's vicissitudes without making too much of it in the way of emotion. And to some extent, those people suffer the most because the expectations of their own accomplishments and achievements are so high that inevitably, occasionally, they buckle. James Carlin wrote a story called Conversation with a Desperate Man, a book for any man on the brink and anybody who loves him. I've gotten to know Jim a little bit recently. He's an exceptionally feeling, emotional person, and he's written his own story as a way to inspire others to seek help and to get help and to know that, as David Friedman would say, help is on the way. Jim, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Hello.
Oh, hi, Lisa. Thanks very much for having me on.
Sure. It's a pleasure. June, by the way, is Men's Mental Health Month, which I find to be an interesting designation. And here we are at the end of June, but still in June nonetheless. So, Jim, so tell us about yourself. Just describe us to you. I mean, just describe you to us.
Sure. Well, the first thing I would say, I'm a dad to two wonderful kids. I've got a college age student going into his sophomore year, doing exceptionally well. He wants to study nursing, actually, and take care of people. So that's a wonderful thing. And my younger guy is just a rising freshman next year in high school. You know, he's a wonderful kid as well. So that's the first thing I would say is I'm a dad. I've been a practicing attorney for, probably over 23 years now. And been in private practice for really all of that time, and was actually an Army officer for 5 years, and was a lawyer in the military as well. So that's part of my path as well. As you say, I live in Weston, Connecticut, with my dog, and love my family, and very fortunate to be able to be here talking to you about, you know, a very important subject.
Well, the title of your book, Jim, is Conversation with a Desperate Man. So what were you desperate about? Why that adjective? What was going on?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I use the conversation, you know, both the title and kind of the way the book is laid out as a tool to tell my own story. And the conversation that I'm having, I mean, you could look at it any number of ways. It's a conversation I'm having with a stranger who's going through, you know, very similar things that I went through. And it's also a conversation I'm having with myself, you know, as somebody who came out on the other side of it, but who can see with the benefit of hindsight all of the things that were happening that were weighing me down. You know, I think for men, and this is a generalization, of course, but I think for a lot of men, there's two principal areas in their life that are going to cause issues for them. If both are going great, you know, obviously everything's fantastic. If one is out of whack, maybe the other can help compensate, but not really. And that is your personal relationship, especially with a spouse or significant other. That's the one major category. And the second major category, of course, is your job. And I think if your job is going sideways, but you have a very strong relationship with your spouse, you can weather that storm. You know, you have somebody there who's got your back, who believes in you, who supports you, who encourages you, and you can get through it. If your relationship, on the other hand, is in turmoil and your job's going wonderful, at some point, it's going to catch up with you. I don't really think the career can compensate for the relationship. In my particular circumstance, both were kind of failing at the same time, and that put an enormous amount of pressure on me, and it was kind of a feedback loop. I mean, the domestic situation was spiraling downward, and that was obviously impacting my job. I was having issues at work, and that was, of course, affecting my home life. So it was kind of the perfect storm, to be honest.
And to what extent was your own emotional state, mental state, physical state responsible for either one of those two sides of your life being in distress?
Yeah, it's interesting. Did one cause the other? Were the external issues impacting my emotional state? I mean, it's really kind of hard to say. I can just reflect on, the 6 or 7 years now that I've been in therapy and trying to gain some insight on, frankly, exactly that question. Because, once you go through it, you want to try to live a healthier life going forward, and you want to be able to recognize the stressors and their impact. But you're quite right. There are things that happen that are unrelated to, any kind of a, congenital, condition. They're environmental factors that definitely play a role and definitely have a negative impact on your job, and they definitely can have a negative impact on your personal relationships. But, if those two areas are under pressure, then that has a tendency to create its own problems. And I guess for me, the insight would be that the last thing that I began to really feel, to be honest, was a physical manifestation. I thought that I could just keep everything at bay, keep the floodwaters from rising too high. And so for me, the last thing that became imminently clear was that my physical health was really deteriorating. I mean, everything from my blood pressure, my hormone levels, I mean, everything was getting out of whack. And I really felt sick. I mean, physically sick every single day. And that was kind of scary, especially when I would go to a number of doctors, whether it be my primary care physician or specialist, epidemiology, and all that stuff. And nobody could really figure out what was wrong until I went to an endocrinologist, and he said to me, we can give you some medicine to try and take care of some of these hormone issues you're having, for example. But I'm looking at you in the eye, Jim, and I can just tell you're a wreck, and you've really got to figure that out, because until you can figure that out, all of the drugs in the world are not going to make you better. And that was his view on it. And then, honestly, after that conversation, I really started getting more deeply involved into care and starting to see a psychiatrist, for example, which I had not done prior to that time.
We're chatting with James Carlin. Do you think in your own culture or your own upbringing there was a stigma to psychiatry, to mental health treatment?
Interesting. I grew up in a very loving family. I'm extremely lucky. Okay, one of the reasons why I'm still here talking to you is I had the support of my friends and my family, and I'm very close to my mom and dad, who are still with us, thank God. They're in their 90s now, or approaching 90 this year, actually, in the case of my dad, and they've been together for 65 years. And I'm very close to my siblings as well. But there was no stigma within my family. They were always concerned about me. They were always kind of sending out the flares, and I just didn't pay attention, or tried to dissuade them from being concerned. Culturally, do I think that I was impacted by it? Yes. I don't think there's any question that when you're in a corporate culture, for example, the last thing you really want to do is, become vulnerable and say, hey, I need to take a break. Mm-hmm. I need to take a time out and just take care of myself, because it's so competitive and there's so much pressure to succeed that you don't want to put yourself at a disadvantage. So that was certainly part of it. The other part of it was really unrelated to work, but it actually had to do with my own mindset. And I think a lot of guys get trapped in this mindset, and not necessarily for bad reasons. So in my particular case, you know, I had three very strong masculine examples in my family growing up. I had my grandfather, who was a World War II vet, you know, who was at D-Day and just did so many amazing things. He was a doctor, and, you know, never talked about his experiences. I only found out about them primarily after he passed away. So he was just a very, and he was a sweetheart of a guy, just a gentle soul, but a nice man and a brave man, obviously. But he was definitely an example. The other example was my grandfather, on my dad's side. I never met him. He actually passed away just about 4 months before I was born, but he was a police officer in New York, and I heard many, many stories about him growing up, and you know, I got to know him through the person of my dad, of course, which brings me to the third example, which was my father, who, you know, after he got out of the service, he had a very successful career at a large financial services company and spent his whole career there and weathered, you know, many a storm during that 50-plus year mm-hmm. career that he had. So those were the examples. And I guess where we get trapped, and of course I now understand this through the benefit of hindsight, but I think where we get stuck is we say, hey, you know, the personal relationship's going sideways. You know, I'm not in a very healthy environment at home. But, you know, gee, my grandfather wasn't in a healthy environment when he was, you know, trying to evade the Nazis. So what do I have to really complain about?
You.
That's that's the conversation. And you know, it's funny when other people read just that one particular point, I get, you know, I get so many comments about it. So, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. You know, I'm a second generation American, and my parents came over here, and they struggled. And why?
So,
why
what
do
should
I complain
about? Right. What do I have to complain about?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that,
we're
that's
chatting
the real
with
thing.
Jim Carlin. Yeah, and the book is called "Conversation with a Desperate Man: A Book for Any Man on the Brink." You came back from the brink. It sounds like you had a lot of love and support. I guess, is that your advice for people that are on a brink right now, that are teetering? And when you say brink, were you suicidal? Is that what you mean by brink?
I never had any suicide attempts, to be clear. But there are, you know, when you study the phenomenon of suicide, which is a horrible thing to have to research, but it's so common, unfortunately, these days, you realize that there's certain stages to it. And so an early stage might be a suicidal ideation where you might be saying to yourself, my God, wouldn't it be wonderful if I didn't have to get up today and do this? And I don't just mean going, you know, staying in bed. I mean, if this could all just go away, you know, that, and then it kind of graduates from there. So I started kind of thinking that way. And I knew that once I started even entertaining those thoughts and feeling like I was in a, you know, Scylla and Charybdis situation, there was no way out, then I had to get some help. I needed some way to get through that. So my advice is, first and foremost, that if you feel like you need help, you have to go get it. The career thing is a definite concern. We are not anywhere near where we need to be as far as supporting people in a workplace that are going through mental health challenges. But you can't worry about that. You know, it's like you're in the ER and you got to triage the patients and you got to take care of the most important thing first. Your career is not it. It's your life. So you have to take care of that. And if that means doing what I did, which is actually going into a psychiatric hospital, then you have to do it. If it just means going to therapy with a, you know, cognitive therapist, then do that. If you need medication, which is definitely not pleasant, but if you need it, it's a tool in the toolbox, and do that too. My advice is, you have to take care of yourself. You got to put the oxygen mask on yourself first, and you're going to have to ignore even your family for a bit while you're doing that. And that's a hard thing to do, but you have to do it. And the other thing I would say is the flip side. If you know somebody who is in trouble, don't fall into this trap. And this trap is, hey, that's somebody's personal business. I don't want to breach boundaries. I don't want to step on somebody's fingers and toes. My twin brother, who helped me through this and actually drove me to the hospital, he had a great line about that. He said, you know something? If somebody's in pain and crisis, you'd rather step on fingers and toes then put a rose on their casket. So get involved and do it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jim Carlin. We appreciate your coming on the show today. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline has a 24/7 number. If you're listening to the show and you're thinking that you might need help, it's 1-800-273-8255. That's 800-273-8255. It's staffed 24/7, 365 days a year with actual human beings. You could also call 211 in Connecticut, but they will most likely direct you to 800-273-8255. Thank you so much, Jim Carlin. I'm so glad your mental health is better and restored, and it's been a pleasure getting to know you. We appreciate you coming on the show today.
Likewise, Lisa. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming right up.